report on Drive Time.
That's what it is, a Middle East report. And coming up in today's show, Trump, nominated for Nobel Peace Prize for brokering a deal between UAE and Israel. Union of Muslim Scholars forbids normalizing relations with Israel. Excuse me. Saudi Arabia arrests famous Quranic reciter Abdullah Basfar. Online from the Middle East Monitor, our memo contributor Tembisa Fakude, and of course Middle East Monitor, you get them at www.middleeastmonitor.com. Twitter at Middle East MNT. Tembisa, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
I'm just chasing my voice around the studio. I think I managed to get it back again. I had to look at my calendar to see whether it was April or not. It wasn't April, but I read the headline, Trump nominated for Nobel Peace Prize for brokering a peace deal, inverted commas, between the UAE and Israel. I need to know more on this one.
Well, it's nothing really serious. Nomination is often, there are no barriers to entry to nomination, and all nomination from head of states, politicians, university professors, and foreign policy members are often accepted. And this year's nomination, or the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, which we haven't had yet, the nominations were 318. So it's nothing surprising. There's no big deal. Anyone can be nominated. And I think Trump is one of those. And the other thing which makes it even more unnewsworthy is because even the man who nominated him, Christian Tybring Gedje, who is a right-wing, a well-known far-right-wing Norwegian politician, is not really taken seriously in his own country. So there's nothing really to write home about. And I wouldn't be surprised if he got a call from Donald Trump to initiate this nomination. So nothing to write home about yet.
Yeah, I can imagine Donald Trump saying to the rest of the world, I was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, but the judges were not very good because they didn't nominate me. So, yeah, I think this could be quite interesting as it rolls out in the future.
Yeah, but no, but there are a lot of other people who've been nominated in the past. I mean, if the entire 318 that was nominated for this coming, which is, I think is about to be announced in November, nomination or nominee. So you can imagine how many people are also or could also be entitled to claim that, you know, that nomination kind of glory. And I don't think Trump will, of course, Trump might just take advantage of it and it will blow it out of proportion, but it doesn't really mean much.
Yeah, look, I mean, this isn't also the Oscar Awards or anything like that. And what I remember, there's a shortlist, and the shortlist is less than a handful of people, and it goes from there anyway.
Yes, 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 indeed.
Let's have a look at our next story, and the Union of Muslim Scholars. I think this is the organization that was started by Sheikh Qardawi. And I think Maulana Ihsan Hendricks, the late Maulana Ihsan Hendricks, was also a member of the Union of Muslim Scholars. But they are issued a fatwa about Israel. Tell us more.
Yeah, they've issued a fatwa. Basically, it was unanimous that they want or discouraging any other country to go ahead and normalize relations with Israel. So that was quite a statement coming from the Muslim clergy. But of course, others will criticize them to say, you know, the war in Yemen has continued for such a long time. We hardly heard from them condemning what's going on in Yemen. Moreover, you had this unjustified blockade of Qatar by Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Egypt, and the United Arab Emirates. And again, they were very... There was quite a mutual response from them, but again, what they've done this time around was quite commendable, which means therefore, even though of course not binding to any country, it's just a statement directed at Muslim and Muslim members, but they're not an organization which is formed or consists of countries, so they can't even impose that decision on any country. We know, for example, that countries like Turkey has also taken a firm decision that not, they're not going to normalize the relations with the KG. So this is more symbolic than anything else. I don't think it will achieve anything except, you know, to take advantage of this political bandwagon that we currently have, which is condemning the United Arab Emirates and also perhaps preventing any of the Muslim-majority countries from initiating similar moves like the United Arab Emirates.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is an interesting story, and I think interesting is probably the understatement of the year when it comes to all of this. And, of course, the Union of Muslim Scholars issuing a juridical opinion. It's not a hukum. It's not a judgment. It's just a judicial opinion, which I think most people will probably agree with anyway.
Well, I think there's going to be a conflict in the near future because we know, for example, that people like Abdurrahman Sudais, who's the main imam of the Haram, was condemned last week after he hinted at normalizing relations with Israel, basically saying it's not haram to normalize relations with Israel, citing certain incidences in the hadith of Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam of what had happened in the past. So what I see happening is that you're most likely to find the Saudi-sponsored and supported ulama having opposing views to those of the Union of Muslim Scholars or theologians, because we know that Mohammed bin Salman and Mohammed bin Zayed are most likely to support each other when it comes to the normalization of relations with Israel. So I anticipate a clash of ideas very soon from both the Saudi and United Arab Emirates sponsored ulama with the Union of Muslim Theologians.
Yeah, I think the safest thing to say, it's not going to be boring.
Oh yeah, it's not going to be boring at all. I mean, we know a lot of guys who are now slowly moving to the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia. One of the prominent scholars, you know him perhaps, is Hamza Yusuf, who is now suddenly become a spokesperson of Mohammed bin Salman and Mohammed bin Zayed. He has totally taken a complete U-turn to what we know him as. He was a very liberal, progressive, you know, forward-thinking scholar, and suddenly he's singing the praises of the two Muhammads, both in the United Arab Emirates and in Saudi Arabia. So we have to wait and see what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, sometimes it's difficult to understand why people think certain ways that they do, but that is human nature, I suppose, and there's no accounting for it.
Sure.
Then we have a look at Saudi Arabia yet again, and I'm going to extend the Saudi Arabian story to the famous court case. But we've got a Quranic reciter, Abdullah Basfar, being arrested. Yet another personality in the kingdom finding himself behind bars.
Yeah, it's actually quite disturbing because he's not the first one. If you know that Salman al-Awda is still facing the death sentence in Saudi Arabia. So this is part of Mohammed bin Salman and the Saudi regime trying to secularize, for lack of a better term, Saudi Arabia. And what they're doing is they're clamping down on all of those people who are accused of being hardliners. And Professor Abdullah Basfar is one of those that is regarded as a hardliner. Similarly, with Salman al-Awda, is also regarded as one of those hardliners in Saudi Arabia. So these are people that are targeted now by Mohammed bin Salman. And what this has done, it has angered the large portion of the society, because these people are not only academics, but they're also leaders of the society. I mean, Qari Abdullah Basfar is quite popular, not only in Saudi Arabia, but in other parts of the Middle East. So his arrest has triggered a reaction from across the region, because this is a man who is listened to by various people in the Middle East. And to have him arrested because he continues to preach and continue teaching certain type or certain kind of ideology of Islam it's problematic, and I think it's most likely to hurt Mohammed bin Salman in the long run. There's most likely to have a backlash, and not only in Saudi Arabia but in other parts of the Middle East. There's been a footage that has been circulating recently when he visited one of the mosques in Paris, I think it was. I think it was Paris or Canada, and one of the members of the audience stood up and started, you know, throwing insults at him. I mean, this was something ahead of, you know, we know that Abdurrahman Sudais and his other colleagues from the Haram in Makkah were almost, you know, they had the status of a pope. Those were people that were untouched, and you couldn't say a word of disdain against them. But suddenly now they are, you know, they've become open season, and anyone who wants to criticize them goes and criticizes them. Whereas before, they were unapproached or unapproachable.
Yeah, they were the untouchables. But what I find interesting about Mohammed bin Salman is his unpredictability, because he's jailed and killed people who we would regard as politically moderate, such as Jamal Khashoggi. He tried to kill his former intelligence minister in Canada, just all straight after they'd killed Jamal Khashoggi. And then he will put in prison right-wing Salafi Wahhabis. It's an open season, isn't it? There's just uncertainty, because anybody who says something he doesn't like, it's off with his head, or not off with his head, but it's certainly off to jail you go. But it's a wide range of people that he's put behind bars. It hasn't just been one particular camp.
Oh, yes, including a number of his family members, some of the princes who are seen, for example, Mohammed bin Nayef, his cousin and the former crown prince, is under the house arrest and is accused of having embezzled a number of funds which were destined for intelligence across the seas. So it's quite an interesting time for Saudi Arabia. This is a dismantling of Saudi body politic as we know it, where there was this a gentleman's agreement between the Saudi family and the Wahhabi. So you had the princes from the house of bin Saud and the Wahhabis who formed this pact of ruling and governing in Saudi Arabia. Now we see that dismantling and crumbling with Mohammed bin Salman trying to take the religious support or religious part of what is known as Saudi body politics, and only concentrating on the Saudi family. And that will indeed create certain very violent backlashes in Saudi Arabia if it's not well managed. And it looks as if now that's what will happen, because he has not only offended the members of his own immediate family, but he's also offended the Wahhabi establishment, and that is extremely, extremely dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, that's a blood pact. At the origins of the creation of the state of Saudi Arabia, the only country in the world named after a family, by the way, the pact was between the family of Ibn Abdul Wahhab and Ibn Saud. In fact, Ibn Abdul Wahhab married a daughter of Ibn Saud, and the deal was Ibn Saud would look after the politics and Ibn Abdul Wahhab look after the Aqidah.
That's exactly it. And now you see that dismantling. So the entire Saudi body politic is crumbling. But it's not only Saudi Arabia. I mean, if you look what's happening in Lebanon, where there's also similar gentlemen's agreement, where you'll have the Speaker of Parliament coming from the Maronite Christian community, and you have the head of Parliament coming from the Shia community, Hezbollah, and the Christians. So you had all of the Sunni Muslim Shia and Christians, you know, having some sort of equal representation within Parliament, not necessarily elected, but trying to maintain harmony between all of these groups. We see that also crumbling. So it's not new what's happening, but it's actually a new phenomenon in the region, which will introduce new type of politics. You don't know yet what that kind of politics is going to be, but it doesn't look like there's going to be stability henceforth, particularly in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
No, it doesn't. And of course, people tend to remember, forget history. King Faisal turned around one day and he said, to hell with all of you, I can live on dates and water. And he was assassinated by members of his own family.
Yes, and it's not the first time within the Saudi. It's a very young family, by the way. And this man, following the arrest of his cousins at the Ritz-Carlton in Riyadh in 2017 or 2016, it has also created a number of opposition within his family, but most importantly, it's created enemies within his family because he has reduced, for example, the allowances that we used to give some of the princes and extended members of his family, and that has created problems and some kind of dissatisfaction. So, you know, what has culminated, this has culminated into him having a large contingent of security guards and not speaking to his mother, we are told, because his mother is also not very happy with the way he manages the country. Apparently, he's trying to prevent his mother from whispering certain words of wisdom to his father. So he's become a loner, being close only to Mohammed bin Zayed of United Arab Emirates, and has alienated all his members of his family except his brother from his mother. So that is a new political situation in Saudi Arabia, and we'll have to wait and see what will happen moving forward.
And indeed, on that note, we have to leave it there. We've been listening to our weekly Middle East report on Drive Time in partnership with the London-based Middle East Monitor. Beginning of the show, I lost my voice a bit. But of course, 3ws.middleeastmonitor.com, Twitter handle at Middle East MNT, Tembisa Fakoudi, a contributor at Memo. And of course, Tembisa, if you see a flash, that's Tembisa on his motorbike. But Tembisa Fakoudi, shukran.
How far is the fake to find us? I want it.